Robert Ballard, best known for discovering the Titanic, will be speaking at Hamilton College Wednesday. The retired Navy officer has spent more than 5 decades working on underwater research and analyzing shipwrecks. Ballard also discovered the German battleship Bismarck and the USS Yorktown, which both sank during World War II. In 2002, he discovered the shipwreck of the PT-109 that John F. Kennedy was aboard when it was rammed by a Japanese destroyer. Ballard spoke with WAMC about his time exploring the oceans.
I go underwater to see what's there. And so shipwrecks are there, but everything else is there too. So if you look at my background, I'm an oceanographer. My doctorate's in geology and geophysics. So I look at the Earth as a living creature. But it just turns out that most of it has water on it. And so I spend a tremendous, not 72% of my time underwater, but a tremendous amount of my time exploring. And I've been lucky to be at it now for 54 years. I'm turning 74 in June, and rumors of my death are greatly exaggerated because I'm probably in the heat of the battle more than any time in my life, ever since I got my own ship, the EV Nautilus. And so the public knows me for my adventures that reach the public domain with National Geographic, like finding the Titanic or finding the Bismarck or PT-109 shipwrecks. But that is really, I would say, a fraction of what I do. But certainly the Titanic was an amazing expedition. As I'll be telling the students, it was actually a cover for a series of Cold War military operations I was doing. I spent 30 years in naval intelligence, and during the Cold War, we were doing a lot of crazy things. But yes, the Titanic was quite an adventure, for sure.
And then I guess, what interests you just about exploring in general?
I think, you know, I'm 13th generation American. My family came over in 1635 and began to walk across the country. I was dropped along the wagon trail in Wichita, where all oceanographers were born, but my family continued to move. My dad was a test pilot with Chuck Yeager during World War II, so I don't remember Kansas at all. I woke up in the Mojave Desert during the World War II, and then we settled in San Diego. And it was really that did it. When my dad planted my feet in the sands of Southern California and I fell in love with the ocean as a kid, it was my playpen. It was my backyard. And I read 20,000 Leagues Under the Sea, and I wanted to be Captain Nemo. And my parents encouraged this wanderlust in me, and I got a scholarship when I was in high school with the biggest oceanographic institution in the world, Scripps in La Jolla, which was in my backyard. And I went to sea on my first adventure when I was 17 in 1959, and we got rescued by the Coast Guard, and I thought that was so cool. And I just fell in love with the process, but it's sort of adventure with a purpose. I mean, it's really to understand what's down there. And I began exploring, like I say, very early. I've been going to sea now ever since. So I don't know what the number's up to, in excess of 150 expeditions. As soon as I hang up, I head over to the Graduate School of Oceanography at URI, where I am the director of the Center for Ocean Exploration. And we're planning we're beyond planning. We're now mobilizing for our next major field season, which will begin next month and run into October.
And obviously, I do want to go back to the Titanic discovery, as you could probably guess. When did you realize it was the Titanic?
Well, you know, when we went over the boiler. I mean, we were hunting. I mean, a lot of people had tried and all had failed. And in fact, we were near the end of our expedition. We thought we were going to enter the almost-ran group. And we were working. The Titanic, as you know, was in a transatlantic shipping lane. And it was a lane that was used a lot during World War II. There was lots of ships sunk by the German U-boats. So we expected to see stuff, you know, but stuff down there can be rusty stuff and you don't really know what it is. And so sure enough, we picked up some debris. We started crossing a line We were running east-west. We knew the debris would be carried by the Labrador Current on a north-south direction, so we were trying to cut a perpendicular across it. And sure enough, on our ninth line, we came into what was, you could hear on the videotape, because we recorded everything, the word wreckage. But it was wreckage, you know, and it was just pipes and things that you couldn't tell what it was. I was chief scientist, so the chief scientist, our ship runs on a 24/7, 4-on-8-off watches. So every 4 hours, there's a watch change. So as chief scientist, your job is to be at the watch changes. So you sleep in two REM cycles, about 3 hours at a time. And your job is to make sure there's this seamless transition from one watch to the next watch so that they get their orders. And so I did that at midnight, and I went up to my cabin, and, you know, I couldn't sleep. There was something going on in my head. I don't know, some premonition or whatever. But I was reading Chuck Yeager's autobiography about 2 in the morning. And unbeknownst to me, below, they'd gone over this wreckage. And so no one wanted to leave the command center. And then the cook happened to be up. He gets up early to make bread and stuff like that. He was out on the aft deck, and he came into the command center, and they said, go get Ballard. And so he came up to my cabin and knocked on the door. And naturally, that was odd, to someone at 2 in the morning. I was way high up in the ship next to the captain's cabin. We sort of had identical cabins as a symbolic. I had my job and he had his job. And he stuck his head in and said, the guys think you might want to come down. Well, bam, I probably ran over the poor guy. And as I came into the command center, we went over a boiler. And we had a picture of the boiler on the bulkhead of the command center, and there it was. So that was when we knew the wreckage was the wreckage of the Titanic.
And then what's running through your head after that realization?
Well, there's two people inside of you. There's the professional, and there's the person. And the professional, you know, this was at the, you know, scoring the winning goal at the buzzer. So your natural instinct was to, everyone jumped up and down and we yelled and screamed. But then someone in the command center made this innocent comment, she sinks in 20 minutes. Because it was 2 in the morning, she sank at 2:20. And that innocent comment was just, bam, it hits you that, wait a minute, this is where everyone died. You know, this is, you're at the spot where all these people died. And the mood just, boof, like a wall switch, shifted from celebration to, you know, deep reflection. And I said, let's stop the ship, and bring the vehicles up high enough off the bottom where we're going to hit anything. And let's go outside. And I'm going outside. And so we stopped the ship. The vehicles are now suspended beneath us at a couple hundred feet above 12,000 feet. And we had a memorial service, and the mood never went back. It just stayed somber as we went about this clinical documentation of the ship, and then made the promise to ourselves when we saw the pairs of shoes where all the humans had landed, and they'd been eaten and their bones dissolved, and their shoes were their tombstones. We all said, we're never going to touch anything, and we never did. We came back the next year, but we only filmed. We never touched anything, and that was just the mood that was set.
And then finally, Robert, outside of the Titanic, do you have a most memorable discovery or search?
Well, by far the most significant discovery I made that just dwarfs the Titanic academically was our discovery of hydrothermal vents and exotic creatures that live with them in the Galapagos Rift in 1977, years before the Titanic. And that was where we believe life began on our planet. So, and we discovered an ecosystem, a very complex ecosystem that was living independent of the sun. And we had, that just threw out everyone's biology book on that one, because we were convinced that life was totally dependent upon the sun and we had found a system that didn't care about the sun, that was living in total darkness, living off the energy of the Earth, which really not only explained the origin of life on Earth, but also made it much more likely that there's life pervasively throughout the universe. And that one, that was over the Green Monster. That was a real major, major discovery.